Hi, this is The Greatest Story Ever Played. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
And today we're going to be talking about Kentucky Route Zero, Act 4, along with the interlude called Un Pueblo de Nada. And before we jump in to this, we wanted to just say thank you off the top for Chris becoming a supporter on Patreon. So thanks so much for your support financially, being willing to back the podcast in that way. So thank you so much.
Yeah, we're super appreciative of the support. And thanks, Chris. Yeah, definitely appreciate that a lot.
If you'd want to join Chris on Patreon, you can do that at our Patreon at patreon.com/thegreateststoryeverplayed. You can sign up for as little as $1 per month. And if you do that, it gives you access to monthly bonus episodes that we do that are usually video game topic related, but sometimes cover stuff that aren't video games. So we talked about like The Mandalorian season one. We've talked about our favorite video game characters, our favorite characters from Telltale's Walking Dead, stuff like that. So there's around 20 episodes in there. So check it out if you'd like. But yeah, I guess with that, we will jump into Kentucky Route Zero Act 4.
Yeah.
All right. So this episode begins with Will and Junebug talking next to a boat / a giant, like, mechanical woolly mammoth. The woolly mammoth, I think, is their dock, maybe, is where their, like, boat's dock is. And then they have a tugboat that they take around the river called the Echo.
Wait, is the river called Echo or is the boat called Echo? I think the river is.
Yeah, the river's the Echo, sorry.
Oh, you're fine. I was just making sure I wasn't totally wrong this entire episode.
No, yeah, Echo is the river, and their tugboat is called the Mucky Mammoth.
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah, and when you talk to Will, he's the handyman on the boat, and he tells you a story about how he was once a teacher at a university nearby, but then he got demoted when budget cuts came in, and he basically like did odd jobs around the university, like became the janitor and doing other stuff.
Yeah, that's shitty.
Yeah, super shitty. And so after kind of getting demoted and having shitty jobs that he didn't want to do, he decided, I want to, you know, find my own way. And so he became kind of the helper on this boat. And the boat is captained by his friend named Kate. And so that's how he kind of gets here and kind of gets our next leg of the journey. Other things that happen around this time is you've got Junebug and Johnny hanging out with Clara on the boat, who is a fellow musician friend that they've known from around. It seems like they have sort of collective of musician friends they know who they like see their gigs and play gigs with them and stuff like that. And so Clara is someone that they know. So they're like chatting with her. And then also Conway has been drinking beer on the boat and his arm is yellow now too.
Yeah, which is a bummer because, I mean, you find out later he like been clean for 15 months, I think, or something like that. So yeah, that going to the distillery and taking that shot really, really messed him up.
Right, yeah, it set him back to where he was back then, it seems. He's already headed that way. Also, Ezra's on the boat, too. Ezra's still with them as well. So that's kind of our crew jumping on the boat, and this sort of starts what this episode is, which is a series of adventures on the boat. The boat goes down the Echo, and they have different pit stops and different things that happen at them. And that's really your, cadence or whatever for the episode of going to unique places and meeting unique people kind of along the river.
Yep. Yeah, there's a bunch of stops in this episode. Yeah, the whole thing kind of takes place all over the place this episode, which is interesting. You get to see a lot of different scenery and meet, I think, probably the most people in any act so far.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're right. It seems like you do meet a ton of people. Like, other episodes, you'd meet a few, but this one, it was like a new cast of characters at every pit stop kind of thing. And your crew's gotten pretty big. You know, it started out as just Conway and Shannon, And, you know, now you're rolling with like 7 people or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah. So, yeah, quite a change. Your first stop, though, is at the gas station on the river. And the gas station is like a floating gas station. And it's at different points on the river every day.
Yeah. Not very reliable.
Yeah. It just goes where the current takes them. So the boat's kind of attitude is, yeah, you fill up when you see it, and hopefully you see it before you need to fill up, kind of thing. And you're like,
yeah,
all right, you live on the edge.
Yep. Sounds like everything else in, you know, the Zero or Echo River or whatever. It's just kind of, it is what it is.
Yeah, 100%. It is what it is, I feel like. Could be like a motto or something almost for this game. It's like how things are going for people. Like, that's the disposition people seem to have. And like, yeah, that sort of thing. It is what it is. You kind of make do with it.
Yeah.
And so at this stop at the gas station, Junebug and Johnny stop inside to get snacks. When they're inside, Junebug talks to the gas attendant, whose name is Norm. And Norm mistakes her for Loretta, who he's supposed to be meeting for a date.
Yeah.
It's super funny. He's like, Loretta, I'm so excited to see you. And she's like, I don't know you. I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, oh, my bad. And is just kind of like embarrassed. But then he tells you about his life a little bit. He tells you he used to be wealthy in Cleveland, but then, I don't know, it didn't work out, or he got tired of it. I forget which. But he ultimately ended up here, becoming the gas station attendant on the floating gas station.
Yeah. A very crazy lifestyle switch.
Yeah, totally. He also asked for, like, tips for his dating profile. He's like, how could I, like, make it better? What do you think about this? Which is pretty funny. But then his kind of last thing that he mentions is that he's kind of forgettable. He has like a forgettable face. Junebug asked Will earlier, like, oh, is there like a lot of gas stations, or do you like stop at the same one? Do you know the gas station attendant? And Will's like, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's the same one or not. Like, I don't really pay attention. Kind of thing. So that feels like that sort of backs what Norm's saying here, is that he's forgettable. But he has this kind of theory. He's like, I think it's kind of dignified, I guess, to be forgettable, that people come along their way and they, you know, pass through me and continue on their journey, just like this gas station or something like that. So it seems like he's sort of identifies with the gas station, and that he's like a stop on someone's way, but like that they get to come as they are and they leave or something. And I don't know, I thought it was kind of like an interesting side comment.
Yeah, it seemed, yeah, really like philosophical or ethereal or something like that. Which, like, a lot of the dialogue in this game ends up kind of being like that. Where, yeah, there's like, I don't know, some heady conversation, and yeah, this guy was for sure that way. And I think there's, you have some chances here to like interact with a bunch of what he was saying too about being forgettable. So I forget how long the conversation went, but I remember it being a fair, like, somewhat decently long.
I felt like I was able to talk to him for a while, too. And I think you're right, that this game really does this. I feel like it can almost feel like an indie movie at times, you know, where, like,
yeah,
you know, they're sort of deep and philosophical, and, you know, sometimes it means something, and, like, there's something you take from it, and sometimes it's sort of like a, huh, that's, like, a thing to think about that's interesting, you know? And this certainly, like, fit that bill for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely. I didn't agree necessarily. Being forgettable sounds kind of shitty, but
yeah,
I guess that's life.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know that would actually be a good philosophy in life. I can, like, sort of understand it in the, like, solitude sort of way, you know? Like, if you're, like, I'm just a thing along the way, and it's like me and my thoughts or something. Like, I sort of get that as a concept, mm-hmm. But I agree. I don't think it probably would actually work out very well or be a very I don't know, enjoyable way to live.
yeah.
I think it would be hard being him. Like, in that conversation, too, he talks about, like, he had a wife, but they're divorced, and he has adult children that he doesn't see. So, like, there's part of that that you're like, your life seems kind of sad. Like, it seems like things kind of got bad, and you've just become, like, a recluse on a floating gas station. Like,
yeah, in a river cave.
That... like that's not real, maybe, or is real, because it's, yeah, it's inside the zero, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't know if it's real or not. It's really hard to say. If it's real, it's like a different dimension. I don't fully understand it.
Oh, I guess as that, I think it's real as in it's really happening, but I do think it's in the same, I don't know, part of the universe that the zero is on. Like, yeah. I don't think it's in the above world or whatever we'd call it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's real because it's happening to the people that are in the game. But, yeah, I don't... yeah, it doesn't seem like it's on the same plane of reality as the rest of the world, which is weird. Is this the first time they've mentioned another, like, actual city, like Cleveland? I can't remember in previous acts or previous episodes they've done that.
I can't remember if it's in this episode or one of the last ones, but they talk about Memphis at some point.
Oh.
Maybe it's in the later episode that Clara needs to be in Memphis tomorrow or something.
Okay.
Oh, in the entertainment, the bartender lied and said he went to New Orleans, too.
Oh, okay, yeah. All right, so it's probably more common.
So, yeah, it seems like it's set in the real world except for, you know, the stuff that has to do with the zero, but...
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Strange.
yeah, for sure. But from here, we leave the gas station and we continue on down the river. And our next stop is the Rum Colony. The Rum Colony is exactly what it sounds like. It's sort of like a beach bar kind of thing. Like it's a beach that has a bar on it.
yep.
essentially. But you'd imagine it's like a shitty Kentucky beach, since that's where they are. And
yep.
Yeah, it fits that. So for this stop, Shannon, Junebug, Johnny, and Conway get out. Conway goes off and gets drinks and drinks by himself. And, you know, that's not good. He's diving full on into this. Like, he's drank on the boat the whole time before this. He was drinking beers. Now he's switched to rum. So not good. In this, too, Shannon goes and actually talks to him about his drinking and, like, asks some questions about it. And for me, Conway basically just kind of brushed her off and was like, you know, it's fine. I can be steady. I've been steady before doing this kind of thing, like something like that.
Yeah, that's about the same response I got. And I forget if this is the time when he gives you, like, yeah, I was clean for 15 months. Or if it's later on in the episode, but he kind of just justifies it. Yeah, it's like, it's a circle. I hit these spots and I get better. And then, you know, it just kind of comes and goes. Seems pretty nonchalant about the issue.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, he seems to like be pretty, not disinterested, but kind of with it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, this is just sort of what happens to me. You know, sometimes I don't drink and then other times it's like this, and, you know, either one, I get by and it's fine. And you're like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, we'll see, I guess.
Yeah. Concerning, for sure. And then your other kind of big thing that happens here is Junebug and Johnny go to watch their friend Serrano perform. So he's another musician that they know. He's performing up at the bar. They go and, like, chat with him a little bit before he plays. This one, you get a performance, but you don't get vocals for it. It's just performing, or just the music. But is cool. And also, when they go and talk with him, there is a part where before he, like, starts his gig, he has his, like, tip cup. And as Johnny, you're, like, talking to him, and... you're like, oh, I can, like, go around and, you know, shake the tip cup for you. You know, I get it, you know, fellow musician. I can handle this for you. And in their conversation, Serrano says something that stood out to me, so I wrote it down. He said, about the tip cup, he says, "I guess it's no fun to give someone money if they really need it. Too much responsibility, haha." And so this sort of thought of, you know, I'm a musician, I do need money for this. Like, this is my, like, job, it seems, or at least part of my job. And, you know, wants help in that regard. But also, if the crowd senses you're desperate, then they'll kind of clam up and they won't give money. So, I don't know. I thought that quote was interesting. And it's probably pretty true, actually. I bet that is what happens in real life as well.
Yeah, I imagine that is probably true in real life, too. If you seem desperate, or I feel like people would equate that with not being a good musician. So why would someone give a bad musician money, even though all musicians need money? You know, like, it's kind of a, I don't know, circular reasoning, I guess. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting point, too. I think the way you explained it made a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's true. If it comes off as desperate or you're not good, it's like, oh, if you were a good musician, you'd already have money. Like, people might just jump to something like that. And it's like, there are plenty of good, I don't know, musicians or artists or whomever who don't make a lot of money from it, but are really talented. And I imagine the opposite would be true, too. People who probably aren't talented but have a lot of money, it's not, like, a good indicator. But, like, if people feel like you're depending on them, they can, like, back off. Like, even, this is doesn't have anything to do with the game, but, like, even, you know, like, when you see commercials that will try to, like, guilt you into giving money to a cause.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a part where, like, when you see it and you're like, I don't want that responsibility. Like, I'm just trying to live my life. Like, it can kind of give you that reaction. Instead of just being like, I don't know, I've got some cash, I'll help out sort of thing, you know? So it's sort of interesting. Like, if people feel the pressure, they'll respond negatively to it. But, like, on the other side, you see a lot of, like, altruism or goodness in people when they don't feel that pressure. Then they're like, oh, yeah, I got you. Like, you know, I'll buy your meal. It's fine. Or, like, I'll do this thing. Like, you know, so you sort of get both. But it's interesting if that his comment, too much responsibility. Like, I wonder if, yeah, if people feel that, then they kind of are warded off. And I thought that was an interesting insight.
Yeah, I think probably for human nature wise, people just don't want to get involved in, like, messy situations. So someone, you know, really needing help, it's kind of messy. So it's easier to just kind of be like, nah, that's all right, I'll let someone else do it. I mean, I think that's in some ways human nature. I feel like I'm like that sometimes. So
yeah,
it's easier to ignore, put my head in the sand, than it is to get involved with something that makes me uncomfortable, you know? Not great, but it is what it is, unfortunately. Something I have to fight against.
Yeah, totally. I agree. It's not a good thing, but it's, like, in us and like all of us, all that. And I think this does a good job of shining a light on that. I thought that was cool. Cool. Okay, so we wrap up at the rum colony, and we head to a payphone, which is a payphone on a barge.
Literally, a floating piece of barge with a payphone on it. That's it.
Yeah, super funny. And you start off waiting in line. There's a guy in front of you. They finish their call. Then you get to kind of go through your folks having calls. So Will listens to messages. When he called his, like, voicemail service or whatever, it said he had 21 messages. I listened to the first one, which seemed like nonsense, and hung up. I was like, I'm not listening to all of these. It's probably too much.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't listen to any. So,
okay.
Like, there was one that hung up. Yeah, I didn't really listen to it, though. Or read it, whatever.
Yeah, I was like, that's a little too much. I don't want to do all that. Then Kate calls one of her clients to check on her pregnancy. So Kate's side hustle, besides being a boat captain, is being someone who helps people give birth.
I think it's a midwife.
Yeah, I think that's the term. They used a different term, I think, during it, but I don't remember what that one is. So midwife. So that's her, like, side hustle. And apparently,
so weird.
Yeah, strange. Seaboat captain / midwife. But it sounds like she's pretty good at it and is able to manage it with the boat, because she commented that she's only had to have someone who lives on land, like, fill in for her a few times. Like, she's typically able to be there, like, almost always. So I thought that was kind of I don't know how you pull that off, but she does it. And I don't know. I guess that's a thing in this game, too, is that people find a way to make things work, for sure.
Yeah, you live in one alternate dimension, and then you deliver babies in the real world. It's like, what? What? But, yeah, do you.
Mm-hmm. Next up is Clara, who calls her sister Nadia, who lives back home in Lithuania. And Nadia tells her that her uncle is now in hospice and won't see anyone. They have some of a conversation about that. Nadia, like, wants Clara to come back because then maybe the uncle will see people, kind of thing. And Clara's like, I'm so far away. I wouldn't be able to get there in time anyway, kind of thing. And I think the way mine ended, at least, their conversation wasn't very resolved. And it was like, you know, if that's what uncle wants, that's okay, I guess.
Yeah, I think mine can end with, well, he's just being difficult. Like, he'll come around.
Yeah. Okay. Nice.
Pretty unfortunate, though. I mean, that'd be really difficult. Like, family member you're close to in hospice, and you're like, I don't even, God knows where, and on the planet, somewhere far away at least.
Yeah.
It'd be hard.
Yeah, it would. I agree. That wraps up the payphone.
Oh, there's this one interaction. I think Conway's talking to Ezra about, do you remember this? About, like, Ezra's like, I'm going to call Julian, you know, his giant bird friend.
Oh, yeah. And then
Conway's like, oh, does Julian have, like, a payphone up in the sky for birds? And Ezra's like, no, don't be ridiculous. He has a landline back at the museum. It's just like, okay.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so sorry.
Don't be ridiculous.
That was like my favorite interaction, I think, from any of the acts so far.
That's amazing. That's funny. I didn't get that one. I like that a lot. I when Conway talked to Ezra, he like told him some rambling story about something and then jumped in the water to swim back to the boat to get more beer or something. So
yeah, I think it was right before he did that. He jumped in the water. I think there was some. I think it. Yeah, it was definitely Conway. There was some dialogue option where.
Yeah, yours must have went that way. Mine must have went a different way. Just, yeah, but, that's super funny.
Yeah, he's like, don't be ridiculous. Like, it was the dumbest question of all time.
yeah, that's amazing. I like that a lot. From here, you go to the Radvansky Center. For me, actually, I didn't go inside this one. I stayed on the boat. Did you go inside?
Yep, I did do this. I did this one.
Okay, tell us about it then. I like read about what happens, but I stayed inside the boat and played a card game with Ezra instead.
Okay, yeah. So at this one, Shannon and Will, I think those are the only two. I forget. Go in to this center, and then yeah, you can sign up and do this like really strange test. It's like a study. And what happens is, I played as Shannon, and you go in this room, and you, like, look at different things in the room. It's like a living room setup. And you look at different things, and there's, like, as you're doing it, people are watching the recording of you doing this thing and talking, kind of like, almost like a narrator of, like, what they're doing, what Shannon's doing. And then you, like, go over to this desk and answer some questions, and apparently the people that are watching it are from like way in the future. They mentioned a few times like they were surprised Shannon's last name was Marquez because they knew of Weaver Marquez, but said they interacted with her like a long time ago. So it's very strange. Like the test is really normal, that she just does things, answers basic questions, but the dialogue from the two, I don't know, researchers studying the videotape, it seems like it's from a long time ago. So that was interesting. I have some thoughts more on that when we hit general thoughts, but
okay.
Yeah. So you do that, get some money, and then you kind of bounce.
Weird. That's super strange.
It was weird.
I probably should have went in. I think I fucked up staying on the boat. Also, I guess as a side comment, for all of these stops, you are kind of given two options where you can either go to the location and do the thing that's going on, or you can be characters that stay on the boat and do a different activity. So, yeah, kind of interesting. And this theme continues for me, actually, on the next one. So there's the Grove, which is you can go and collect mushrooms. So Kate goes and does this. I stayed on the boat. Did you go collect mushrooms or did you?
I did. It was nothing crazy. You just, there's, all right, there was one funny thing. Yeah, you go with, I think, yeah, Ezra and Kate go. Or, yeah, it's Ezra and Kate and mine.
Okay.
Kate tells you to eat a mushroom as Ezra and then you eat it. And she's like, oh. Or she asks you what it tastes like and you tell her, she's like, oh, that's wrong. You should probably spit it out. And she spit it out. And she's like, oh, yeah, that was this kind of mushroom. It kills many people. And you're like, what? And
oh my God.
Then you just kind of go and collect mushrooms. It was pretty easy. But okay. that was really funny, I thought.
That is funny. So for mine, the way it worked out was Ezra was on the boat. Kate, like, went and got the mushrooms. She came back and gave and said, hey, go wake Will up so he can, like, make stew or whatever with the mushrooms. And so Ezra, like, wakes up Will, but and Will tells him, like, about a weird dream he had. And also Ezra was given, like, a tape recorder, and he records, like, different sounds he hears around the boat that could be used in, like, a musical act for Clara, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So strange thing for sure.
Yeah, I got the recorder, too. I forget what part, but I recorded a cat.
Okay, nice.
And that was it.
Okay. I recorded, I think, a TV, like some of the dialogue from a TV record, like a videotape or something, and maybe something else that was going on. But yeah, definitely a weird thing. I feel like this game too. No, actually, I'll save that. Never mind. It's not important. It's just a tangent. But yeah, I think through too. Also through. The game at this point too, if you choose to like not go when the people, like if you stay on the boat and do something, you get recapped by the people that went what to do. So like when you went and did those tests, I was playing the game and Will came back and was like, we made some money doing these tests, you know, or whatever. So they sort of fill you in if you miss it, but it does seem like the experience is notable for sure, especially for that one.
Yeah, that one, I don't know if it's actually relevant, but it made me think about some things that, again, I'll share at the end, but...
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So, our next stop is the Echo River Central Exchange. And for this one, Shane and Conway actually go out on a smaller boat to go here. I guess the way the river is right here, it's, like, too shallow for the tugboat to go. So only like small boats can go there, and they say, we'll meet you on the other side at, Sam and Ida's on the other end kind of thing. And, you know, you can just go through this stop and then you'll end up there sort of deal. We'll find you. And it's like, okay, cool. And so Shandon and Conway go on the small boat to do this delivery for them. On the way, you can stop at various places before reaching the exchange, that you can, like, stop and read signs or interact with stuff if you want. There's a bat sanctuary, you know, that sort of stuff. But the first stop is a monument to the Elkhorn Miners. And this monument is, like, I thought it almost looked kind of like a firewatch tower. And then it had, like, a bunch of helmets, like, around it and attached to it kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, like, a pile of them in the middle. And, yeah, like a wooden thing above it.
Yep. Yeah. So, they come upon this, and it has an inscription, which I thought was good, so I wrote it down. So, here it is. It says, we claim these helmets in the names of the folks who wore them, and we place them here in their memory, but also a spit into the greedy green eye of that power company who bought up our old mine and traded our brothers and sisters' safety for a little more yield, but only yielded 28 good men and women dead when the walls collapsed and the tunnels filled with water. Their lungs were black, but now they are washed clean and full of water too, and swept through hidden tunnels into some awful cave we will never find, and so we guess the water buried them for us. Let this be a marker for their grave. And if any son of a bitch from that power company wants to come take back these helmets as company property, just you try it and see what will happen. So, a lot of anger understandably, for sure, from the builder of this monument. And Conway and Shannon talk about this for a second. You know, before we knew that Shannon's parents died in that mine, but you get it more confirmed here.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, it seems too like more just like an expose on corporate shittiness and greed. We kind of got some of that in each episode. I forget. They're acts, right? I want to call them episodes. I guess that's the same thing.
Yeah, they call them acts. I kind of use them interchangeably also.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I feel like in every act / episode, there's some commentary on corporate greed. And it's cool to see this one. It's kind of like a big middle finger to the the shitty company.
Yeah, I really like this. I thought this was great. And even justly, like, when you read it, it's just capital letters and run-on sentences. You know, like, you can just you can just, like, feel the hate in it kind of thing. And you know, and Conway comments on it, too. He's like, this is a good reminder. I didn't know about this before, and it's a good reminder now again seeing it. Like, that was shitty kind of thing. And yeah, I mean, that is good. That power company sucks for that. Like, you got people killed because you cut so many corners and all this. Like, everyone around there, like, you should be held accountable, but everyone around there should hate you and not trust you for something like that. Like, that's wrong.
Yeah. I have, well, never mind. Go ahead.
Cool. Okay, so from here, they continue going down this smaller river. It ultimately results in getting to the exchange, and Shannon talks to the switchboard operator, Poppy. They have an interesting conversation, too. She says that at one point, this spot had 13 operators. Now she's the only one left. And there's this interesting comment of that, like, they have her, like, I guess to do this, the switching, like, it has to be, like, really precise timing. And so they ultimately, like, the company wants to replace her with a computer but can't. And so there's part of her that's, like, resentful that, like, she's going to be replaced with a machine ultimately, which, mm-hmm. you know, makes sense. But then she comments that, you know, how long do you think this would take? And you have the option of saying, like, a day, a week, or a month at least. And
yeah.
I said a month at least, and she was like, yeah.
Yep.
You would think so. I've been doing this for years. So this makes yeah. me think, is it cheaper to just make me be the machine than actually make one kind of thing? And, you know, that sucks. And you're like, that sucks. You right. Like, that's bad.
Yeah, I think I said, like, you're not a machine. And
that's what I said too.
Yeah, that'd be a shitty situation. Again, another commentary, if you will, on corporate BS.
Oh yeah. From here, you go back to get on your boat with Conway, and Conway's gone. He's actually riding in another boat with two skeletons from Hard Times Whiskey. He's full skeleton, and he just kind of sets off with them.
Yeah, that was crazy and pretty shitty.
Mm-hmm.
I have some questions or thoughts more on this, too, we can talk about at the end, but yeah, didn't expect that.
No, I didn't either. I didn't see that coming, and it was just like, he's gone. Like, that's how it sort of felt. When you, like, see him leave, you're just like, this sucks, man.
Yeah. Like, you were the main character.
Yeah. That's something that's crazy, too, is that it shifted, right? Like, I guess Shannon's the main character now?
Yeah, I mean, she has to be. I mean, this episode, too, we got to play as, or we play as lots of different people, which has been happening more and more, but this episode especially. Yeah, for the first two episodes, it was basically just Conway. And then the last one, it was a little bit of everyone, but mostly still Conway. But now it's just Shannon.
Yeah, because before it was mostly Conway, but some Shannon, right? And now it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, just shifted. Because this episode, we don't play as Conway at all, right? I think we're always...
I don't think so. Yeah. We're Shannon, Shannon or one of the other guys. Yeah. Or girls.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, that's crazy. What a fucking shift. Weird move. Like, I like it. It's in a good way, but it's surprising. Like, I wouldn't have guessed any of that. So, from here, though, Shannon makes her way down the rest of the part of the river she's on by herself. You get, you can find out about interactions she has along the way that are, I don't know, have little quips within them, but not anything crazy. She doesn't, like, stop. And you ultimately arrive at Sam and Ida's, which is a kind of renowned kitchen on the Echo River. Sam goes and catches the food, and Ida cooks it up. So that, and they're like, it seems like an old couple who's just been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, that was my impression.
And you find out that back in the day, there were two divers that had come in and made a big impression on them. So first you hear about this story from Ida. So she says that, you know, one day back in the old days that weren't good, two divers came in and they ordered one of everything on the menu. And so I cooked everything up. And Sam comes in and says, they're still hungry. You know, just keep making anything. You know, make everything you can think of. And she's like, you know, I made all sorts of dishes I'd never made before. I was just doing stuff. And the guys just kept eating it up. And so this conversation's prompted because Ezra spots some food that's like real food, but is essentially dipped in plastic. They have a different term for it, but I don't remember it right now.
Oh, yeah. It was some kind of wax.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, I forget the term for it too, but I think something wax.
Yeah, it's like encased in wax. So it looks like real food, but it's, you know, been there forever. And so at the end of that like night, Ida was like, I can't remember all these dishes I made. I made like wild stuff that I've never made before. So they just encased the leftovers in wax. And so she sort of used this as a inspiration moment. As like, you know, if I'm wondering what to cook, I'll just go back and look at this and I'll be reminded of all the great things I made that day. And, you know, I can do it. So you hear that from her. And then meanwhile, then you start playing as Sam. Sam comes back to the restaurant. He's got a cold gray squid, is what I named it, in his hand.
Mine was blue squid.
Okay.
Some blue something. Blue fish, I can't remember.
Okay, nice. Yeah. And he's, like, talking to it, and he tells it the story of how he, like, found you. He was like, you were really deep in the lake. Like, I bet you're wondering how I found you. Well, I found you because two divers came in one time back in the day, and they were so hungry, and they were doing this thing. They were one-upping each other about diving stories, you know. They were so close. Maybe they were brothers, but each of them would say, you know, one time I was diving in this lake and I did this. And the other one's like, well, what about this other time I was diving in the lake and this thing happened? They each said they had over, you know, 1,000 hours diving in our lake alone, you know. So they're, you know, just telling stuff back and forth. And for me, I'm just listening like, okay, where's all the good shit at? Where are the good, you know, creatures in the lake living? So I'm just like listening, soaking up everything that they say. They're talking and I run back and tell my wife and I'm like, hey, just keep making these guys food. You know, they want more. I tell her calmly, but then I'm just listening, eating up all their spots. And because of that, I have a map of everywhere that they went in my head. And that's why I'm able to get the best food. You know, before we used to serve frozen bullshit. But now I get all the best seafood because I know all the good places. And so that map's in my head. And after that meal, I told Ida, we should encase this in wax. And when I look at it, I'll just look at it and I'll see the food and I'll remember the story they were telling. back then, and that's, you know, got me here for the last 15 years. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Like, it almost feels like a tall tale in a way, and I really like that.
Yeah, I like how you get both of their impressions of what happened too, because, yeah, like, Ida was like, Sam burst in and, you know, was crazy and all these things. So Sam's like, yeah, I just nonchalantly told her to keep making food. I think it's funny you get both their impressions, and they're both pretty different, but the substance is the same. The divers, where they were telling stories and they kept making them food, then they preserved the food. It's funny.
Yeah, they preserved the food, and it was like an iconic moment for both of them, that they were like a struggling restaurant before, and now they're like renowned, now they're like successful and all of that, and that this like moment made such an impression, kind of thing. Yeah, kind of cool. The last thing that really happens at Sam and Ida's is Shannon, before she like goes back to jump on the boat, you can see like a traveling band going down the river in the foreground, and so you can just like hear them performing and see them go by, which I liked. I waited through their whole song before I jumped on.
Yeah, same. And there was actual lyrics too, and this one, I think it's the same band that was in Act 1.
Okay.
Or Act 2, I forget. Yeah, they've been around at least one other time in the foreground.
Interesting. Yeah, that's awesome.
Definitely Act 1. It was when you were in Weaver's house, or going up to Weaver's house.
Okay. Nice. That's awesome. I like that. That was cool. Another like addition in there. From here, you continue to your next stop along the river, which is a neighborhood. And at this neighborhood, Junebug and Johnny watch Clara perform. And this one is interesting because you don't actually ever see her perform. Instead, it's them sort of describing what it was like, reminiscing about previously seeing her perform where Serrano opened for her. And so they're like, you know, Serrano was doing this thing with his, like, something kind of guitar and, like, you know, this sort of stuff. And also in their conversation, they talk about how to change their act up a little bit. They want to add drums to it. And they also talk a little bit about Ezra potentially joining them in their group. And there's sort of like a interesting move there. As I think Junebug kind of comes from the thought of like, you know, we weren't really anything without each other, but we've like built ourselves into, I don't know, the relationship we have with each other, and it's good. And then Johnny on the other side is kind of like, everything's really good, but like, is there supposed to be more? Should we do something different? Maybe we need a third person to like, you know, complete our little family or whatever, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so it's almost like they're gonna adopt Ezra and teach him how to play drums. I thought that was pretty funny to get him in the band.
Yeah, it seemed like that was sort of a rationale to do it. It's like, well, if we taught him to play drums, he could be part of our band, and that would, like, you know, make sense or something, kind of thing. Because it seems like, for Junebug, it seems like she's kind of, like, would need that sort of rationale to get there, almost.
Yeah.
Whereas Johnny maybe would want it, aside from that, would want to, like, do that for Ezra just because, or whatever.
Yeah, that seemed to be the case. She was definitely more hesitant, whereas he was like, let's do it.
Mm-hmm. So, yep, that wraps up Neighborhood. Then you go to your final location, which is the Silo of Late Reflections. You get there, the boat drops you off with your truck. You drive it a short ways until you get to this tower, and you can't go up it in your truck anymore. You have to go on foot. So the group packs up the antiques to carry them, and they decide to head up this tower on foot to be able to get to Dogwood.
Mm-hmm. And that wraps it up.
Yep, Act 4 is over. Now, you, as the episodes are, you get an interlude in between. So we did that interlude. That interlude is called Un Pueblo de Nada, which I think means the town of nothing, or the nothing town, something like that.
Or, oh, house is casa. Yeah, that might be right.
I think it's something like
nothing.
I think that's right. They mention it in the interlude. Yeah. They mention it in the interlude, but yeah, I looked it up, but I already forgot. But I think that's what it is. I did look it up. But what it is this interlude is the last day TV station. The last day, like, broadcast. And there's a big storm going on. You can, like, hear it going. The ceiling is, like, leaking water as stuff is going. Like, it's not a good scene.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. It was also really packed full of people doing stuff. So it seemed kind of like low budget and falling apart all at the same time.
Yeah, it seemed like it would be like public access TV almost kind of thing. Like a sort of thing where it's like, yeah, super low budget. They have a camera. They have like they technically have a studio so they can put something on almost.
Yeah, at best. That's it.
Yeah, at best. And so you play as Emily, who's the producer. The way the episode works is there are about 8 or 10 people there that you can interact with along the way. And so you've got Rita. She's like the host of the TV show. You've got Maya, who is a guest. Ron is there. he's maybe like a writer or something for the show. His job was to get a video that he said was wild, and then just talked about how the video was wild.
yeah.
you have Mo the Crow, who manages playback. It's an actual crow who mans this computer.
yeah, it's like another one of those weird, like, it is what it is, you know, no one seems to notice that it's that strange, so it must not be that strange to them.
Yeah, right, exactly. It seems totally normal that a crow is their coworker. Then Bob and Ben are repairing a radio, and they're like trying to repair it to be able to like find Ghost, basically is their goal. And then you also have Serrano and someone else for the weather. And so through this interlude, you kind of can interact with each person and have different stuff go on. For me, the highlight was the weather. Serrano, like, performs music in the background of the weather happening, and I thought that was pretty cool. And the weather is, like, like a head projector that you used to use in, like, elementary school?
Yeah, an overhead, like, lamp projector. Yeah.
And the weather's, like, being told through these, like, little slides, basically.
Yeah, again, low budget as fuck.
Oh, yeah. For real. But yeah, it was goofy, but I really like Serrano's music in the background for it. I thought that was pretty cool.
yeah.
But yeah, definitely like a weird whole thing here for sure.
Yeah, it was very strange. I don't know how they're going to incorporate any of this in the next act, but yeah, I wonder if we'll get some answers on like, well, because, yeah, Weaver shows up, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a second. But then, like, yeah, Emily, Bob, and Ben, we've seen them in random different things. So, yeah, I wonder if they'll get explained in the next act. That would be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, like you said, kind of the last main thing is that Weaver's message interrupts the program, like, at the end of it. It, like, she takes over their program, and she's, like, found a way, basically, to, like, hack into the TV or whatever, and it takes it over for a minute, and they're like, oh yeah, she like has figured out this and always does this. It doesn't always happen. It was before Maya was gonna like do her interview, basically, and it gets hacked, and they're like, oh, you can't do the interview, we got hacked, like this happens, so I guess our show's done, kind of thing.
yeah, and they just call her like a prankster. I'm like, that's not pranking, that's fucked up.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know what to make of that. One thing that I did read, I didn't go deep into it because, you know, there might be spoiler-related things in it, but it commented that this was a flashback and that earlier in this act, they said that this station, like, was destroyed by floodwaters back in the day.
I do remember that a TV station was destroyed. I didn't know it was this one.
Yeah, I guess it was this one. And so I guess this was a flashback of, I guess, probably that day that happened, since it was like raining a lot. And that maybe Emily, Bob, and Ben have been ghosts that we've kind of seen along the way.
Huh.
I don't know what all of that means. Because, I remembered seeing, too, that, like, a TV station was flooded or whatever, like, earlier. Like, I remember them saying that. I didn't put together that it was this one. But when I was, like, doing a little reading, like, trying to make sure I got all the stuff from this episode, I saw that comment and I was like, all right, they're ghost.
Interesting.
I don't still know how this all fits in, but I guess they're ghost.
Well, did they die when it got flooded?
Maybe. I guess, yeah. I was going to say, I guess they can't all have died, because Serrano is alive at the rum colony earlier.
Yeah.
But maybe, well, some of them did.
Do we have any idea of how long ago that happened? I can't remember if they said that in the episode, or if they referenced, like, oh, it was a long time ago, or, like, recently this happened. I don't remember.
For some reason, I thought they said it was a long time ago, but I don't know for sure.
Okay. Yeah, it would make sense, maybe. This kind of leads into general thoughts, if you want to go there.
Yeah, do it.
Cool. Yeah, so the timelines, man, they're, I'm not sure, like, how they all align. So, our band of people we're playing as, like, where they fall. Because, so maybe you're right, maybe, like, Emily, Bob, and Ben, that, the TV station, maybe that was way in the past. Maybe at the same time as, like, the miners when they drowned, who knows. But then you have the future when, like, for me, Shannon was doing that study, and, like, the people were watching it, they were saying it was way in the past. They were, like, dug up this old video of her, Shannon, doing it. That was, like, from the archives. So that seems like that was from a long time ago. So I don't know, like, if what we're playing as is, like, actually also in the past, but not the same past, or if there's parallel timelines. Like, I have no idea. I really hope they kind of explain some of this stuff in the next act. I don't know if you have ideas about the timelines or something, but I feel pretty confused about what's going on, and kind of excited to figure out what the hell is going to happen.
Weird. No, I guess that, like, what was it? The Museum of Dwellings, right? They talked like we were in the past.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they were, like, looking at the security footage or whatever.
Right.
Of Conway and Shannon.
Yeah, that we went to, like, all the houses and tried to ask questions to get to Ezra or whatever. So I think you might be onto something. So we play in the past right now, even though it seems like the present. Then there's the past that actually happened a long time ago, the station flooding, probably the miners getting flooded. But then where you're like scientists from this episode, or the people from the security footage asking about us.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. Okay. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you've cracked that. I think that's true.
We'll find out, man. Who knows? It could be something totally different. But that, to me, that seems like where it's headed.
I think, yeah, I could see that. That makes a lot of sense. Because now, especially, like, more than ever, like, I guess it does result in Dogwood getting the delivery. Like, it seems like we're actually going to have it happen. But, like, man, the way this game started till right now, it's so much different.
Yeah, dude. Like, it almost seems like, yeah, deliveries, the still objective goal people are moving towards, but I forget about it every episode until at the end. I'm like, oh, yeah, we're still trying to do this. But it's more just about the journey at this point than it is about the destination.
No. Oh, yeah. And that, like, you lose Conway along the way. Like,
yeah. What the hell?
You know, what a weird thing. Like, maybe the antiques are what they're looking at. Maybe that's, like, what it, something like that. I don't know.
Huh. I don't know. Sorry, this bleeds into another point. So I'm going to double dip here.
No, do it.
I, I imagine we will, but do you think we'll see Conway again? Because Shannon, he gave Shannon his truck. That was in this episode. So Shannon is doing the finishing the delivery for him, and he's totally a skeleton. I wonder if he's kind of done, or if we'll see him again at the distillery or wherever he ends up. It's strange.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll see him again. I also wonder if we'll like see him again and not know it's him, and like will he remember it's us? Like, do Hard Times Distillery employees remember their time before that? Do they remember the people they knew? Or do they just become like sort of blank, and because they all look like yellow skeletons, we wouldn't be able to pick Conway out, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder. If Conway's just done. And also I wonder what the skeleton resembles. I mean, I think you suggested last time if it was like debt or something like that, but I'm not sure now, because now Conway's a full skeleton, but he's not in more debt, I assume.
It doesn't seem like his debt would have grown this episode, like, at all. I didn't see anything that would change that.
Yeah, and then his arm was a skeleton arm this episode at the beginning, or became one at the beginning. So yeah, I wonder if they're going to explain that too.
I wondered if that was from the shot, from like, he owes Hard Times. So his leg, he owes the doctor / electric company.
Oh.
And then his arm being, he owes Hard Times, but who does he owe?
Interesting.
Oh, shit. It's the rum colony. He was drinking at the rum colony, which I think Hard Times supplies the liquor for that.
Maybe
his whole body became the debt? I don't know.
But that wasn't right away. I feel like that would have happened, like, right after they left.
Yeah, I don't know.
You might be right, though.
I think you pointing that it's not debt might be more right now, but that theory just now maybe makes it still a little in play, but I think you're probably right that it doesn't have to do with that. But
yeah, I really hope they kind of make some sense of this stuff. I'm just itching to find out what's going on.
I also read this. I didn't catch this when I played, but you may have, is when Conway's like, you know, sitting at the rum bar, or I think there's one other place he is. If you shine the flashlight at him, the other skeletons are with him. You just can't see them unless you shine the flashlight. I didn't do that, so I didn't see them, but that's what I read.
Oh, there is, when you do the tests, the people like recording whatever, at one point they like look at a security camera from outside at the boat, and you see Conway talking to two skeletons, and then they just disappear. So that did happen. I forgot about that.
Okay. So they were kind of there all along with him. Trying to get him more into debt, or to come to Hard Times and convince him it's good? I don't know.
Who knows? But then, it's weird that Shannon and sees them.
Right. You see them once you're in the exchange, which was in like a tunnel. Maybe it's because the light's different in there, so you can see.
Yeah, because there's no light.
Yeah. That could make sense. So you can't see them in outdoors, but if you're in, because you could see it in the bar, but that's a dark room. Or like, I mean, even if there's lights on, bars are like dark compared to outside. And Hard Times is underground, so I assume there's not natural light down there, at least.
I wonder if we're just getting like way too I don't know what the word is, going too deep with these. Like, it could just be something really simple, like they were there the whole time and people just didn't care. I don't know.
That could be too. And I think for this game, just like some of the comments we've made along the way, I think we could either be not deep enough and like kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Or way too deep. It seems like it's both. Like, I'm really, really looking forward to finishing this game, and then also like scrounging the internet to try to understand more.
I'm going to read and watch some stuff about it once I'm done.
100%. Totally want to do the same, because I'm like, all right, what's, you know, I want to read some interviews or like, you know, someone who's like, I can truly explain this game, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, someone much smarter than we are.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I want to look deep into that, because, yeah, there's clearly a lot of things here, and we've definitely gotten some of them, but I'm sure there's things we've totally missed, and, like, stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't know. Definitely interesting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. You can do some of your general thoughts now that I've...
Sure.
Double dipped.
No worries. Cool. First thing I had was just about this episode is I thought traveling the river was pretty cool. Like, I liked how it looked. It looked like, not the same, but similar to when we like went down the Zero, but I liked it more. And, you know, we had a bunch of interesting stops along the way. Like, I thought that was really cool. And they set this episode really up. And like, even just how it felt going down the river, and then you like see a location and you know you're going there and all of that. Like, I really like this. And for being like such a minimalist like art style game and stuff, I thought that was super cool.
Yeah, I think it was way better and easier to navigate than when you're on the above ground map with like the tire, you know, rolling around. Mm-hmm. Yep. I thought this was way better than that. And I like the visuals more as well. I think I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I like that. I really like the use of musicians in the last few episodes. As you can see, that, you know, I've been highlighting them, but I think they're cool. I think it's a cool change in this, and I think last episode we commented on when Junebug performed, we thought that was cool that, like, you know, the whole time dialogue has been text-based, you know, there's no voice acting, but then for this performance, you hear it audibly. It's vocals, there's instrumentals, all of it, and I like that that's been a thing along this way, and is a cool change, and I think even fits the vibe. It seems like kind of like strange traveling musicians. Like, it feels like it really fits this environment of like Route Zero and the strangeness here, like people who perform at bars for a couple dollars, it seems like. Like,
yeah,
it fits. It seems right.
Yeah, I also really enjoyed the traveling musicians. I don't like, I'm not the, you know, the biggest fan of like bluegrass music, but I really liked the song they played. And then I liked the same band. I assume the same band. They played the song in the first episode. I really liked that one too. But yeah, it is weird. It's like really silent with eerie background music, and then all of a sudden you get lyrics and you're like, whoa. Like different mm-hmm. music and lyrics. It's pretty cool. It's kind of striking, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It's striking. And same.
Piercing.
Same, too. I'm not, like, a bluegrass guy either. Like, that's not really the kind of music I choose to listen to normally. But, yeah, I really like it here. Also, I like the, wideness of what music is. Like, having Ezra record sounds to make as part of your music, or that Johnny has a keytar and they want to figure out a way to set a drum kit up to it, or, like, the things they play, and whatever Junebug does when she performs. Like, she does singing and dancing and another thing. And she was like, yeah, I can't do drum kit while I do that too. But, you know, it's just like they're, performing artists, I guess, or whatever. Like, how they talk about that and do that, and that they see potential kind of everywhere. And that it's interesting. Like, I would never naturally think, hey, record weird sounds and put that in part of your track, that will be cool. But that's how they like think about it, and I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've liked it too. I'm not like the biggest new age, new wave music stuff either, but I've really enjoyed what they've done so far, and like, it is really creative. I wouldn't ever think about that either, think to do that kind of stuff. I think I agree.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. I have one last thought. Is that I think this act might be my favorite. Either this
really?
One or Act Two. Definitely a big fan of these, and I thought this episode was really enjoyable. I feel like we've spent different points of this time going through this game and being like, what the hell is going on? But then other points where we're like really settled in and we're like, I don't quite get it, but I can theorize and I like some things and can pull some things, and I don't know. I'm eager to see how it will wrap up, but I'm like, I feel like this is going to be among my favorite games that we've played in the first half of this year, at least. Like, you know, not that we played a ton of games yet, but I'm liking it. Like, it's standing out. And I hope they, like, land the ending well, and then I'm, like, officially feel that way. But it's been enjoyable, and I look forward to, like, playing and talking about it. So I think they're really doing their job.
Yeah, I agree. It's been... It is one of the most, like, interesting games I think I've ever played, ever experienced. Because it's... Yeah, you're right. It's just confusing enough that you're like, okay, I need to keep playing to figure out what happens. But it's not too confusing that you're like, okay, this is annoying and stupid. It's over my head or something like that. I mean, there's definitely points where I'm like, what is happening? But then the more you play, you're like, oh, okay. That sort of is explained. But yeah, it keeps you hooked enough that you're like, all right, I'm going to finish this. I'm excited, interested. Like, let's keep going. I think I definitely agree. And was Act 2 where you meet Ezra? Yeah, is that where you meet Ezra?
Yep. Yeah, that's
Act 2. Okay. I liked that one too. I felt very similarly to this one, where a lot of stuff happened and you're like, okay, this is the story's progressing, but it's interesting but kind of confusing, but a good confusing.
Yeah, that's a good point of like a good confusing. Like, there's stuff that doesn't make sense or add up, but it doesn't feel annoying. And along the way, they add things that are good quips that like draw you in or whatever. Like those two quotes from Poverty, about poverty, I pulled out earlier in this episode. Those were great and like pulled me deeper into the episode. Or the different times you saw musicians play, that pulled me deeper in. Or, you know, some of the interesting characters you meet along the way kind of pull you deeper in. And I think they're doing a really good job.
Yeah, I agree. I had one last thought too about this, or something different, but I noticed there was like different graphics in this episode versus the last, I think the last three. I mean, like essentially the same art style, but it was closer up. Like you were closer to the characters. Things felt more like, felt bigger, I guess, if that makes sense. Because back in episode 1 and 2, and I think episode 3, you played more far out. Like the camera angle was wider. Mm-hmm. So the people you're running around with were way farther away. But this one was way more like you were up in their shit, you know. I thought that was interesting, too. I wonder if the developer just got better technology or something, or if he just was like, all right, I'm going to do this from now on. I was thinking about that.
I think you're right that, I definitely observed that, too. I noticed that you could... Like, you don't see people's, like, full faces ever, but you could see a lot more of them this episode. And I think you're right that I'm guessing their tech got better, because I think I read the first episode came out in 2013, and I think this one came out in 2016. So I'm sure even in a few years, your tech probably gets a bit better. I'm curious for the final episode, because that one came out in 2020, I think.
Oh, wow. So. Watch it be like 4K HD ultra high def. That'd be really funny. I don't think I'd like it if it was, to be honest. No. I like the style. It's more mysterious.
I like the style, too. I hope it doesn't change significantly from what it is now. I like what it is now. I liked what it was before, but it was cool to see it change. I bet that looking at this game through like the lens of all those years, I can't imagine what it would be like being someone who played it as it came out, you know? Like, that's... You know, we got the benefit of playing it all through, you know? We're going to get to play the game in probably, like, 2 months or something, or 3 months or something like that, versus people who waited, like, 7 years to play it, like, bit by bit.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know how you'd do that if you forget what happened. I feel like you'd have to replay the episodes, because it's so, like... There's so many small details you would forget.
Yeah. I wonder if that... Maybe that's what people would do, is, like, Episode 1 came out, they played it. When the interlude came out, they played that. When episode 2 came out, they played 1, the interlude, and then episode 2. You know, and, like, did stuff like that to, like, just recall. Because, yeah, I think that period of time, it would be so much that you'd kind of lose some of it. So I wonder if you'd just go back and, like, keep playing old stuff. And, like, if there's people who've just played episode 1 a bunch of times now because they did something like that, you know?
Yeah, I wonder. I feel like you'd have to.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you'd lose some thread. And being so weird, like, I wonder if you just would be removed from it if you just say, that was odd, and, like, leave it at that, versus, like, you I feel like we're like living in the experience of it being weird, and because it's so close together for us now.
Yeah, and it just seems easier to track with. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we don't have to wait so long to play.
Right.
I forget small things. I mean, I forget stuff each episode, but I'd forget way more if it was, you know, 3 years apart.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, 3 years apart, I think I would certainly be replaying.
Cool. Yeah, that's all I had for general thoughts.
Sweet. Yeah, that is what I've got as well. So that wraps Act 4 for Kentucky Route Zero. Next time, we'll be back with the final act, Act 5. And, yeah. Yeah, it's been fun talking this game. I'm really excited to see what is to come for it.
Yeah, same. I'm so ready to figure out all the conclusions that are drawn.
Yeah, me too. Cool. Well, yeah, I guess with that, if you'd like to contact us, you can do that on Twitter at StoryEverPod. Our website's thegreateststoryeverplayed.com. There you have an access to our backlog of all of our episodes. You know, the three previous Kentucky Route Zero episodes are on there, along with a bunch of other games. So if you'd like to check those out, that's there, or wherever you get podcasts. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, like Chris off top at the beginning, you could do that at patreon.com/thegreateststoryeverplayed. Also, if you'd want to support the podcast but can't financially, that's totally cool. You could do that by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcast or Podchaser or wherever you get podcasts. That would be helpful. Or, you know, just sharing it with a friend, posting it on Twitter, whatever. Anything would be super helpful, just to really be able to get the word out to enjoy games together with more people who like the same kind of stuff that you like and we like, and I don't know, getting to share in that more. So we'd super appreciate it if you'd want to do that. And yeah, that's the episode, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.